Hello, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. We're actually broadcasting live, so it's not evening yet, so I just have to wake up and have some more coffee. This is your host, Zany Mystic. Today, I'm delighted to have as my guest, and for you guys that are listening, you're going to be very thrilled, Daryl Anka. Now, many of you will have heard of the delightful entity that he channels named Bashar. I think I'm saying that right.
Yes.
Bashar is an irreverent extraterrestrial whose message is one of self-empowerment and hope. At this time, let's greet Daryl and say welcome.
Thank you, Lance. Nice to be here.
Daryl, for people who are not as familiar with Bashar, maybe you could give us a little bit about a background on your soul contract to channel Bashar and how it came about.
Sure. This whole experience sort of began about 30 years ago for me when I had two very close broad daylight UFO sightings over Los Angeles, and that started me investigating a lot of the different things about UFOs, metaphysics in general, and 10 years after the sighting, I was actually introduced to a channel at that time. And was offered an opportunity to go into a class. I went in not thinking I was going to become a channel. I just wanted to do more research and see how something like that could be taught. But during the class, which was essentially a series of guided meditations and different kinds of mental exercises, I received what felt like a telepathic connection, and a memory came back in that instant of who Bashar was, why the UFO had been shown to me to get me to move in that direction and fulfill an agreement that we had made prior to this life for me to act as a channel for him to bring information through. And the question at that time in the telepathic contact was, now that you remember we made this agreement, is this still something you want to do? It was still offered as a choice. And after thinking about it for a while, I decided that it wasn't really important that anyone believed that Bashar was really a separate entity from myself. What was important was that the information coming through could help people make constructive changes in their lives. And for that reason, I decided to go ahead and continue with the channeling, and I've been doing it now for 23 years all over the world.
Wow. Wow.
That's how it started in a nutshell.
Okay. That's pretty exciting. I know I have a million questions. I'm just going to kind of just go with the flow here. A lot of us consider ourselves to be starseed, and I imagine there's a lot more here than we know. Some say that the whole planet is actually starseed. How can we begin to awaken to our heritage and discover who we are?
Well, I think one of the great things about Bashar's information is the way he touches in on self-discovery is by speaking primarily about the principle of following our excitement in life. I know we've heard that phrase, you know, follow your bliss and follow your joy many times throughout the metaphysical community. The thing that I really appreciate about Bashar's information is he really explains in a very, no pun intended, down-to-earth fashion why that's so important energetically. According to him, acting on your excitement is really being in alignment with the vibration of your true natural core self. So when we do act on our excitement, when we're willing to follow that path in faith and trust, we are actually being most ourselves. And according to him, by then being most ourselves, being in that vibration, living in the now, synchronicity opens up in our lives in a way that guides us along the path that we really need to be guided along.
I love that message, and I've read the book Bashar Blueprint for Change, and I have some of these CDs, and I'm telling you, they're astonishing. I mean, the depth of wisdom that comes out of Bashar, and the gentleness that occurs when interacting with people in the audience is just phenomenal. You know,
yeah, we really enjoy the way he delivers things, and I think, again, the thing I appreciate most about the way the information comes from him is that he's exceedingly direct.
Yes. Oh, yes. I love that. I mean, I've had gurus and teachers and things, and some are direct and some are not, but, you know, somehow you have to cut through to the chase, and Bashar just goes right for the jugular and then lovingly, you know, brings up the best in people. It's just amazing. I mean, I think it just blows me away.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And again, that's, you know, that's why I have kept on doing it. I mean, my understanding is that the original agreement we made was supposed to last 9 years. And at that point, Bashar felt that all the basic information would have been delivered, and anything after the 9 years was really kind of left in my hands. And, okay. And here we are 23 years later, primarily because of the feedback I get from people, how the information does really help them make the kind of changes they want.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of different theories about what's going on here on Earth. And one of the things that I tend to wonder about is when people say that there are millions of ships surrounding us at this time with various members of Star Nations watching and helping us, I tend to believe that. But then, you know, I look for evidence, and I haven't seen any lights in the sky yet, although I believe. What's your feeling on this?
My take on that is, well, for the most part, of course, aside from some of the actual UFO sightings that do occur where people are actually seeing visible ships, my impression of people that are watching from other nations, other stars, is that they take great pains to make sure we do not actually observe them for the most part, whether that's a product of their technology or being able to shield their ships, or whether it's a product of them being slightly out of phase with our vibrational dimension. However they accomplish that, my impression, and from what Bashar has said, is that they have kind of a general non-interference policy in observing and helping us, so that they can guide and they can suggest, but they want to make sure that the decisions we make are our decisions and not made just because we think they're watching. Mm-hmm. So they tend to sort of hide behind the curtain, however they accomplish that, and take a back seat to make sure that we're choosing the things we want to choose without necessarily doing so because of what we feel might be interference or influence on their part.
Right, right. Does it seem like we're headed for some kind of major shift that might be in alignment with the Mayan prophecies? Or?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes. the way Bashar's take on that is that, of course, we're in the middle of a shift right now. It's not necessarily that there is a specific demarcation where everything is one way before that date and everything is completely different after that date.
Yeah.
We've been in a series of transitions for quite some time now, although within that overall long-term transition, there are certainly, you know, marker points that represent, let's say, major milestones or threshold crossings within it. And Bashar has explained, at least from his perspective, that 2012 is certainly representative of one of those. One of the ways he's actually explained it is sort of based on what I just talked about in terms of their non-interference policy.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually said that in some sense you could say that Earth has been, let's, for lack of a better term, quarantined, or that they have this hands-off policy. He has said that 2012, among other things, represents the end of that quarantine.
Oh.
Now, that doesn't mean that the very next day ships will be landing all over the place. But what he's saying is that depending on the changes we make on the planet, they will at least from that date forward be able to respond more openly to us creating a more conducive environment for contact and a number of other things. So that definitely has a demarcation date importance to it, but I think a lot of it will depend on what we're willing to do with the energy before we see any major response on their side.
Okay. I've also heard that there's some kind of technology that the government has that that they're planning on creating some kind of holographic space battle. I know this sounds ridiculous, but, you know, who knows? Anything is possible.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I do understand that they have, that the government and probably other governments on the planet have certainly had awareness and access to certain aspects of ET technology for some time. I certainly know there are those who are of the belief that it is not a good idea to release that information. But conversely, I've also come recently into contact with some people in the government and in some of the let's say, intelligence communities, mm-hmm. who are very much in favor of getting that information out, but know that that it needs to be done in a way that does not cause disruption in the society, does not cause panic.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that such a scenario would necessarily have to be played out in terms of a fake invasion or anything like that, but I do know there definitely is a little bit of a tug going on in some of these intelligence communities as to exactly how to and whether or not to get certain kinds of information out there.
Well, that what falls in line to what I've heard from Dr. Stephen Greer with his Disclosure Project too. Although, you know, again, it's hard to for us little people out there in the world to be able to verify what's actually going on.
Right.
But it does seem like, in general, what you're saying is pretty accurate, and I'm hoping that the information will come out. I mean, it won't be disruptive to me in any way, except that it will be a big relief to finally get the truth out.
Yeah, and I think inevitably it will.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, again, Bashar, when he senses our energy and he senses our timetable, has often stated that he believes that certainly within the next decade or two, most people on the planet, from his point of view, will absolutely know one way or another that extraterrestrial life exists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how that comes about, how that information gets out there, he hasn't necessarily gone into detail about, but he does sense that within the next decade or two, that information will be public information, and what happens from that point forward, again, is really about how much we're willing to take responsibility and how much, you know, we're willing to make changes that would allow for even more knowledge to be brought forward.
Mm-hmm. It seems like one of the problems that we have here, one of many, is that we haven't really stepped out of our barbaric patterns of behavior, and we're just completely ravaging the planet, and we haven't included her as part of our life force.
Right.
And the other problem is that we tend to look upon visitors from outside of our sphere of, from anything that's outside our little box, as being gods. And, you know, we tend to worship anything that has technology. So it seems like that could be a problem for us.
Yeah, that has definitely been our pattern in the past. And I think that's one of the main reasons why the ETs are taking kind of a stand behind the curtain approach to it. They would rather that we pay attention to the information and
mm-hmm.
not really focus so much on the messenger. And because they know of our tendency to sort of put them in a higher position or on a pedestal, that's not something that they want, at least according to Bashar's sources. And they would certainly rather that we interact as equals, regardless of what we might, you know, regardless of what stage we might be at with, you know, our own evolution technologically or whatever. That they don't see their technological advancement as anything for us to regard them as better than we are or anything like that. They would really like us to understand them as equal kin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea. And, of course, it depends on which ones we're talking about. You know, if you're talking about Zetas or Greys, it might be a different story
Yes. I mean, there are definitely different things going on out there. We can't certainly lump ETs into one group. I'm sure they're as diversified as we are in a number of different ways. And one of the things actually that's sort of come out from some of the Bashar sessions, specifically with regard to the Greys, is from his point of view, he doesn't even necessarily look at them as ETs. He's actually, and again, you know, I don't know, there's no way to prove this per se, but I'm just sort of relaying what perspective he's delivered.
Uh-huh.
From his point of view, and I know this is probably, again, going to get a little bit complicated,
okay.
But I'll just deliver it the way he delivered it.
Okay.
The Greys, to him, are actually not technically extraterrestrial. From his point of view, they actually come from a parallel reality.
Huh.
And in that sense, he says they actually used to be human.
Huh.
And have done something to their civilization, done something to themselves that prevents them or has prevented them from being able to perpetuate their species.
Mm-hmm.
As such, they lost the ability to reproduce and required human DNA in order to create a hybrid race to perpetuate their culture. Now, the only place they could, at that point, get a hold of human DNA was from a parallel reality, which I guess turns out to be ours. And in that sense, even though they have technology that allows them to have spaceships and have colonies on different worlds, in that context, they're not technically extraterrestrial. They're simply mutated humans. Huh. But I think the additional message to that is, and why a lot of so-called abductees have heard the Greys say, we are you, and give them scenarios and visions about impending doom on the Earth, is that that's what they did to their world, and they're trying to tell us that we're headed in the same direction if we don't change our course.
So
that they're trying to urge us to not follow the same path they did, and instead to turn things around. That's the picture that Bashar has painted about it, which is actually quite interesting.
Yes, well, that makes a lot of sense. I've heard that kind of falls in line with that they have factored their emotional body out of existence in the process of cloning themselves or whatever it is, you know, the technology taking over.
Right.
And that it's the emotional body that is connected to the soul, and they're actually dying off earlier because the soul doesn't want to enter into those bodies anymore.
Right. Well, and that's the whole idea, I think, behind the hybridization program, is they're creating a new being between their DNA and our DNA that has more of that emotional capacity and continues on. And to complete the circuit of this particular story, Bashar has said that his people are, in fact, those hybrids.
Oh, my.
And they have been created as a result of the blending of the genetics between the Greys and humans on Earth, and they are here to sort of help complete the picture and assist us through this time, not only just because they are of a nature to do so, but also they actually do look at us as their literal kin, as their ancestors, and they owe us a debt of gratitude for their creation.
Wow.
And so in a sense, they're trying to help us find the light based on coming from a viewpoint of understanding that, you know, that they have, that's a little bit of a bigger picture than we have.
Would that alter their present if our present were to go in a certain direction?
No, not really, because the way Bashar has explained the whole concept of time is we're really dealing with multiple parallel realities here.
Okay.
You can't really affect your own timeline in that sense.
Okay.
I hope that's clear to everyone, because I know that's kind of a complicated idea, too, and start talking about space-time mechanics, but he's explained it in the way that a lot of quantum physicists talk about the many-worlds theory, that if you, quote-unquote, time travel and go back, so to speak, in the grandfather paradox and kill your own grandfather, you're not actually killing your own grandfather. You're killing a grandfather in a parallel time track. It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Any more on that?
Lots more.
I love this stuff.
Don't know if we have time for that.
I really like this line of thought. I mean, I love everything about the subject, and I've just recently become fascinated with, you know, contact and you know, doing the ambassador training and so on and so forth. And but I know that things have to happen in their own time.
Absolutely.
Back to humanity. we are, it seems like part of the problem is that higher consciousness is something that we're headed towards that. Is that the direction that Bashar is kind of trying to help us to awaken to our own power?
Yes, and it actually even goes a little bit further than that, because according to him, his picture of us is that we are definitely already exhibiting that. It's just that we're sort of holding ourselves back in a way.
Mm-hmm.
He sees that we inevitably are there. We're inevitably expressing higher consciousness, and from his perspective, he probably would not be communicating with us if he didn't think we would achieve that.
Okay.
It would serve no purpose in that sense if he wasn't able to actually reflect to us that conversations with the kind of being he is are actually an indicator of the fact that our consciousness is changing.
Right.
So for him, it's actually kind of a done deal in that sense, but he's willing to go through the process of awakening with us and help us understand what is going on in that process.
Well, that certainly is something that we should be grateful for. you know, I'm grateful for. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about Bashar's perspective is that they're actually grateful for it as well. They're not coming across as, you know, the great know-it-all teachers. They actually get a lot out of the interactions they have with us. And one of the things that I love so much about what he said about what we're going through here on Earth is they sort of have a nickname for us, and they call us, they've called us the Masters of Limitation. And what they mean primarily by that is Earth and its journey has experienced so much limitation that we've gotten very good at turning dark into light. And they say that by observing our experiences with that, it actually shows a lot of other civilizations, a lot of other beings, how such transformation is possible. No matter how bad things get, no matter how dark things get, it can be turned around. And they actually see us as being very strong in spirit for having chosen to go through that kind of an experience. And a lot of other beings are learning a lot from us. So they're very grateful for being able to have us teach them how to transform such you know, deep limitation into true freedom.
Well, good, good. Then all our pain and suffering isn't for naught.
No, I don't think so. I definitely don't think so.
I know that Bashar says a lot about, you know, puts the whole crux of choice back onto us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet right now at this time, you know, we see genocide going on and, you know, wars and various.
Right.
How do we empower ourselves to rise above that and take responsibility for creating that?
Well, I think you've actually just said it. We do have to take responsibility for it, and we have to know we are able to make choices together. And one of the things that, again, I think, you know, Bashar has this wonderful knack for seeing the positive in everything. And one of the things he said is, you know, you're seeing an acceleration of what appears to be negativity now. But from another perspective, that means you're getting everything out on the table, that you're finally getting to the end of the cycle of limitation and negativity, bringing everything out on the table all at once so you can actually see what it is you do and don't prefer and start banding together to make choices about what kind of way we want this world to be and what kind of way we really don't want it to be. And of course, as you know, the world gets smaller and smaller and communications reach more and more people in different parts of the world, we have the ability in various ways, like through the internet and so on and so forth, to talk about these things, discuss these things, and really make a decision as to what we do prefer, what we don't, and do something about it, because it really is in our hands.
Well, I hope that we can activate that choice the next time we go to the polls and have our votes rigged.
Well, that's what it's all about. I mean, we've given ourselves the ability to accomplish things in a number of ways, and it's really about getting up and taking action on them.
And
acting the way we believe, you know,
and maybe finding ways around
walking our talk, so to speak.
And finding ways around systems that aren't working, or creating.
And again, you know, Bashar said it's not even so much about changing the old systems; it's about implementing new systems so that they will be there when the old ones fall away.
Yes, that's good. I like that. One other thing that I'm curious about, and this is just kind of a minor thing. But I know people like, I think it's Zechariah Sitchin talks about the Anunnaki, and I've heard some theories about the creator gods coming back at this time to take over, that they actually have been here already. Is there any comment about that, that there was some kind of battle between the original creator gods? And
well, again, I know Bashar has touched on this a little bit. I don't remember everything he said about it. And again, I wouldn't necessarily phrase it in the terms of a battle, but I think there is some truth to the idea that certainly we've been in contact, or ETs have been in contact with us for a long time, and may have certainly been instrumental in what we are here on the Earth. But in a sense, because we're discussing this whole subject now of ETs and UFOs and raising of consciousness, certainly that is a representation of that whole idea coming back. And I think, you know, similar to the concept of raising our awareness and so on and so forth, that we're going to find that we're awakening to the fact that, you know, we are connected to them in more ways than we ever realize.
Uh-huh.
And that awakening is what will hopefully put us in touch with what abilities we have to determine, you know, our own destiny and our own reality. And that we will exemplify that idea of the, you know, of the creator gods on our own and take our place, in a sense, as equals to them.
Huh. I like that one. I like that one. It seems a little far off right now, but I guess...
Well, but things are accelerating, so you never know.
That's
true. I mean,
that's
the other thing he said, is that, you know, once you reach a critical mass, it doesn't take that much longer for things to, you know, to tip the scales.
Kind of
so
like
it may take a long time to get up to that point, but,
yeah.
But once you tip the scales, it goes pretty quickly from that point forward.
Well, then that could be kind of considered a shift then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Good. And, I mean, I personally, and the people that I talk to, you know, through the Internet and various other places, are quite ready for a shift to happen now. And, of course, they're saying, if we have to wait till 2012, we're going to be not
right.
Basket cases by then.
Right. But, see, that's what I'm saying. I think that the shift is happening. I think
yeah.
the scales are tipping.
Okay, good.
And people need to sort of ride that momentum now and not wait for it. I think they need to, you know, take
Off
the
on.
Actions that are representative of following their excitement right now so that they add their momentum to the tipping of the scale.
Right. Can you talk a little bit more about following your excitement? Because I use that daily, you know, and
mm-hmm.
yet even I have a hard time getting in touch with that on a daily basis. And it seems like it should be the simplest thing to do, but...
I think that's actually what makes it the most difficult. Is,
yeah.
As Bashar said, we have been taught to sort of tend toward believing that simplicity is not worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
that it has to be difficult to be worth something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for us to wrap our minds around the fact that a simple concept can be that powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But when Bashar talks about following your excitement, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to translate into a particular project or a career or anything like that. He's basically saying, on the simplest possible level, at any given moment in the course of any day, you have a number of options of things you can take action on. And all he's saying is, look around at what those options are. And the one at this moment, at any given moment, that has the most excitement is that you have the highest degree of ability to take action on, he's suggesting that you do it. Because he's saying it's the excitement in it, not how it looks, that tells you it's connected to anything else that would be representative of your excitement. And through synchronicity, it will lead you there, even though you may not be able to intellectually see how it could possibly do so.
Uh-huh.
So he's basically saying, like, if, you know, you're doing something exciting and suddenly there's nothing else you can do about that, and you stop and you pause... And you look at all the things available to you at that moment.
Uh-huh.
And let's just say, for example, for some reason, taking a walk on the beach at that moment seems to be the more exciting thing out of anything you could do at that moment to do.
Uh-huh.
He's saying, do that. Because uh-huh. even though your mind may go, well, how is taking a walk on the beach connected to this or that or that?
Right.
He's saying it's the excitement that tells you it's connected, and who knows what's going to synchronistically happen to you if you actually take a walk on the beach. You may
uh-huh.
overhear exactly the snippet of conversation from someone else you needed to hear at that moment. You
yeah.
may run into someone you needed to meet at that moment.
Yeah.
And it's the excitement that will lead you into that exact, perfect, right place, right time with the right people. Instead of intellectualizing how you're supposed to make it all happen, he's suggesting that you allow it to happen, and your excitement is the organizing principle and the driving engine that will allow that to work for you.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Oh, good. And I
intuitively.
Guess I probably explained it properly.
Intuitively, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I do find that it's kind of like going with the flow. You know, when I'm able to do that and not
mm-hmm.
just let my mind chatter on incessantly about why I should or should not do, and usually
right.
it's a should not, then sometimes it's as simple as just, well, why don't you go to the store and get some vegetables?
Right.
And at 10 o'clock at night, I think, okay, and I'll do it, and it's amazing. You know, just miraculous things happen.
Exactly.
So, I guess
exactly. And Bashar is basically saying, look, every single time you do that, you will always get the feedback and the reflection that life does work that way
mm-hmm.
if you simply let it work that way instead of trying to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Is there some are there some magical genies behind the scenes pulling the strings of synchronicity?
Well, I think synchronicity is basically a reflection of the structure of existence itself. In other words, that's just the way existence is. And when we're taught a lot of contrary beliefs, we don't allow ourselves to take advantage of the structure as it is. We tend to think we have to create the structure as we go, and all we actually have to do is reveal the structure that's already there by simply relaxing our idea of what it should be and actually working with it the way it actually is.
Is reality like holographic in nature, or
He's described it that way, yes, and I believe it to be so.
Okay.
So, like a hologram, whatever reference point you have is what determines exactly what you experience of it. So just as you can have all the information of a hologram located in one particular place, it depends upon your point of view as to exactly what part of that hologram you may see at any given moment. So Bashar's often used the holographic, or what he says, of course, because we have television here on the Earth, he uses the TV example in that, you know, at any given moment you have any number of television programs you could be watching, and just because you're only watching one, because your channel is tuned to that one, doesn't mean all the other programs aren't there at the same time. So reality is the same kind of mirror, where you basically get the feedback and the experience based on whatever vibration you're giving off, whatever channel you're tuned into at that moment, whatever expectations, belief systems, or definitions you believe most are true, that determines the experience that you get. And when you change those definitions and change those beliefs and change those perspectives, you get a completely different aspect of reality, which has always been there, but which has been invisible to you until you tuned yourself to that particular channel.
This is
why I sort of really like the way Bashar delivers information, is because he puts it in very practical terms, you know, in ways that really make, you know, very grounded physical sense. And to him, it is really nothing but physics.
Yeah. It's so funny, because when I hear you talking about it, it just clicks in. It absolutely makes total sense. You know, I mean, I live my life that way. Sometimes the problem is letting go of the beliefs that keep me from changing my point of view.
Sure. Well, he's talked about that extensively, too. I mean, he's devoted hours and hours and hours in various seminars, as evidenced, you know, by the hundreds of CD recordings that we have, that of how to exactly get people in touch with what their beliefs and definitions are and how to change them. And it's from his point of view, it's really a very simple 1-2-3 kind of process that does work when people apply it, you know, precisely. But to him, it's all about getting in touch with what those motivations, what those definitions are, and in identifying them, then understanding that you have the power to actually change them. Knowing why they're there to begin with gives us the power to replace them with what we prefer them to be and get a result from that change.
And it seems like it has something to do with the vibration that we want to live at.
Yes, of course.
And that it seems as if the vibrations of love and of compassion and things of that nature are of a higher source than of negativity and the more destructive vibrations.
Yes, but of course, you know, we do have, as humans, an intellectual mind, and that has to be brought into alignment with the whole concept of the feeling that we understand love to be as well. And when we can do that by finding out what kind of definitions of life we would have that would be contrary to that feeling of unconditional love, then we can bring our beliefs and our minds into alignment with that basic inner core understanding that everything is unconditional love. But we have to give our mind something to chew on, so to speak, in order to make that alignment, to make that realization.
Well, it seems like any time there's a judgment, we're definitely not in alignment.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, while you mentioned the tapes and CDs and things, what is your website, before I forget?
It is Bashar.org.
Wonderful, Bashar.org. And
yes,
people can find out more about they can get the tapes and...
There are hundreds of tapes on hundreds of subjects. They can certainly browse through the website. There are samples there, audio samples of a lot of the different seminars that have been given over the years. They're broken down into subject matter. We also have some seminars coming up here in Los Angeles at the end of September, I believe, on the 29th and 30th if they wish to attend a live session in Los Angeles.
Oh, where will that be?
With Bashar personally.
Is that going to be... Where will that be specifically?
It'll be in Studio City at the Beverly Garland Hotel, Holiday Inn. And all that information, again, is also on the Bashar.org website if they want to get more details.
You know, I know that I hate to say this, but I wish that Bashar could make a trip up to Sacramento.
I have done channelings up in Sacramento many times. Now my schedule just doesn't allow it, but there are probably actually a few CDs on the website that are actually from the Sacramento channels.
Well, I'm definitely going to be keeping my eyes open for that one. Another thing that I wanted to ask you, this is kind of on a slightly different line. How do I say this? What is Bashar's understanding, or how does he relay their concept of a creator or a God?
They have a phrase for that basically translates into the phrase "all that is."
Okay.
They see everything as God, for lack of a better term. They don't believe there's such a thing as an outside to God. So from their point of view, everything is literally God, everything is made of God, everything is the creator, everything is the prime intelligence, however you wish to phrase it, and everything is made out of it, because there is just nothing else but that. So they see everything as an expression of consciousness, everything as an expression of intelligence, and we are a reflection of that with our own free will to co-create experiences that add to the whole. So from their point of view, it's the one is the all, and the all are the one.
Wow. So that certainly changes the nature of worshiping a particular form.
Well, in some senses it does, and in some senses, paradoxically, it actually doesn't. Because from their point of view, all truths are true. All belief systems are true. All forms of relationship with God are true. Because God is everything and anything you can imagine, and there's no way to imagine anything beyond it. So any form of belief, any form of respect, any form of relationship, worship, gratitude, prayer, anything anyone wants to call that kind of communion or communication or relationship with God or all that is still within all that is, and therefore is a valid aspect of it. And therefore, from their point of view, you know, the battles that occur between different religions on this planet just make no sense at all, because as far as they're concerned, they all represent God in one way, shape, or form from a different point of view holographically.
I guess I have a difficulty with a vengeful, wrathful, judgmental God.
But I think some people like that.
and that they need to have that kind of God.
Exactly, and for them, that's fine at this point, and in validating that, then you also simultaneously validate anyone else's perspective of it.
That's right. very good.
That's the paradox.
Yes, good old paradox.
Yeah, he talks a lot about that, and to him, there's great power in paradox, because when you really see both sides as equal, then you're coming from the center.
Yes. Yes, that's very good. Very good. And how to embrace paradox and not get... Yes, I understand that.
Yeah, to him, I think he sort of summed that up in a very simple sort of equation. He says a lot of our difficulties on this planet come from an attitude that something has to be this or that.
Yes.
And from their perspective, it's always this and that.
And that. Yes, absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. Well, it seems like we're starting to shift our... everybody likes to use the word paradigm today. So it does seem that we're starting to embrace multiple paradigms. What about the concept that we're multidimensional?
Well, again, it just goes back to the holographic concept that we are, you know, reflections of all that is, and therefore by our very nature, we must simultaneously exist in multiple dimensions. So I just think that's just the nature of our existence, and we're just awakening to that fact more and more, and able to tap into that more and more and use it more and more in this particular existence.
Well, it seems like it'd be a lot of fun to be able to shift dimensions if we, at will.
Yeah, and again, I think the paradox, according to Bashar, is that we're actually doing that all the time. It's just that we're awakening to the fact that we're doing it all the time. Huh. It's not that we have to learn to do anything like that. It's that we have to awaken to the fact that we're already doing it.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, yes. Even on the simplest level, like we talked about in terms of parallel realities, every vibration has a representative reality. So in one moment, if you are one kind of vibration and one kind of personality, in the next moment you're another, from Bashar's perspective, you are actually literally a different person in a different parallel reality at that moment, because only that vibration can go with that parallel reality if you've made a change. So not knowing that is really what has been happening to us, and now we're awakening to the fact that we've been doing it all along, and the more we awaken to the fact that that's what we naturally do, the more we can direct exactly how we experience that shifting from dimension to dimension all the time, that we exist simultaneously in a multitude of dimensions, and that we only create an illusion of continuity of time and space to explain it to ourselves or make sense out of it to experience a process of change, but we're already in all those dimensions.
We must seem pretty funny to them.
Yeah. He has a really interesting perspective and sense of humor on things, yeah.
So how can people that believe in UFOs and believe in parallel worlds and all of this stuff, how can we begin to, how can we help that process along?
Well, again, at the risk of, oversimplifying it, I think that if someone has an interest in those things, if they're open to those things, then just the living of the life by following your highest excitement is going to put you in touch with more and more experiences of those things, because that's a part of your vibration, that's a part of what people are about. So the simple answer is just follow your excitement, act on it to the best of your ability, be your natural true self to the best that you can, and synchronicity in your particular life will gear itself toward bringing you the experiences, the information, and the knowledge and the encounters that are reflective of that vibration of being your fullest, truest self. And at this day and age and this time, it obviously is also represented by these kinds of ideas, these kinds of encounters, which will grow as we grow. And that sort of represents what Bashar said about the fact that we have to meet them halfway. They can't just show up and land, because that would just be too disruptive. They have to know that our vibration is meeting them halfway, so that we're demonstrating the ability to create a reality, a new reality, in which both us and them can interact.
Well, that does make sense. That makes a lot of sense. It seems like crop circles are helping to facilitate that a little bit.
There are many, many, many different avenues, many different things that are triggering our unconscious minds, many different symbols and tools, I think, that are being given from many different sources to help put people with many different belief systems coming from many different points of view in touch with the same thing. I'm constantly astonished when I talk to different people that have similar understandings of how they got there, because so many people come from so many different walks of life, so many different belief systems they were brought up with, and yet somehow they found the right tool to get them into a very similar understanding from someone who came from a completely different direction. And so I think in recognizing that this is a planet of multitudinous perspectives and beliefs, that we are therefore offered multitudinous symbols and tools and reflections that help us arrive at the same basic understanding. And I think that's just miraculous and marvelous.
Well, you must be seeing a lot of changes over the period of time if you've been doing this.
Absolutely.
And of course, it seems like you would certainly be part of that change. I mean,
of course, the channel is never left out.
Yes, of course. I mean, facilitating that to an enormous extent, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm quite a different person today than I was when the channeling began.
Yeah.
And even though I don't exactly experience the same thing, I don't really hear the words, I'm in an altered state, I get what I need on kind of a telepathic level. I retain basic concepts that might be discussed, and they sink into my consciousness in a way that I can personally use them to change and grow, even though I may not really remember or retain the specific information that was given to someone else in the channeling.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, if you know, you were able to apply the things that come through you, and I didn't realize that you were unaware of it at the time, that when you're channeling that you are not, that you're not...
I'm not aware of exactly what's going on in the conversation. It's like having, the best way I can explain it is it's like having a very active, energetic daydream. And just as if you were totally lost in a daydream and someone walked in the room and said, you know, Lance, hello, Lance, and you just didn't hear them.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like the words are so far away in another room that I just have to pay attention to what I'm experiencing and not what's going on out there. Otherwise, I'd stop the channeling. But in that experience, I know I'm getting thoughts, ideas, concepts, and so on in the way that I need them, but I'm getting them in a very different way, mostly emotionally, pictorially, energetically. And it's not really translating on that level for me as words, whereas the words are necessary as a translation device in order for someone else to get it through me. So I'm acting, in a sense, like a telephone, like a translation box.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, and I've actually seen other people channel Bashar as well.
Oh, you have?
In particular, one time he came through a Japanese woman, and even though it was coming out of her, of course, in Japanese, because that's the language she was raised to understand, just like I was raised to understand English, it was absolutely identically the same personality and the same energy. So, you know, they have learned that human bodies are the perfect biological receivers, and when a person is trained to shift their vibration in such a way as to be open to that kind of telepathic contact, then you've got radios walking the planet, so why not use them?
Interesting. Yeah. So basically, do you actually teach how to do that, or is that something that you have?
I haven't for a while. There are a number of people that do teach channeling classes. A very good friend of mine here in L.A., Sean Randall, teaches an excellent channeling class. And Bashar has taught a channeling class a couple of times, but it's not something that normally he does.
And, of course, that also gets back to the idea that we do have soul contracts.
Yes.
Because you did say that was a soul contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that implies that we have a soul that continues on after the physical body is no longer here.
Exactly.
And again,
based on the idea that everything's going on simultaneously, then that soul, you know, already exists in a different state right now. So, yes.
Okay. I can try to wrap my mind around that. I love these concepts. They're just fabulous.
I know. The simultaneity thing is one that really gets people going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. My brain starts to creak.
Yeah. Well, I think I don't remember who said it, and again, a lot of this is very similar to what scientists are discovering in quantum physics. And I think the quote was something like, it, you know, if you're not absolutely astonished the first time you hear, you know, these principles of quantum physics, then you didn't understand it. You know, and I think that's the thing, is it's this new paradigm, this new shift is all about really changing our perspective in a way that creates that aha moment where you really come up with a new revelatory perspective of what reality is actually about. One of the things, and again, this is sort of a bizarre statement coming from Bashar, but one of the things he's actually said is that the process of spiritual evolution, or the process of ascension, is actually the realization that you actually are the dimension of experience you previously thought you existed in. So that we actually are physical reality. It's not something we exist in. We're creating it. It's made from us. It's an experience happening in our consciousness.
Huh.
It's not really happening outside of us. And then the more we realize it is actually us, that is what, that perspective itself is what generates growth and ascension.
So
if suddenly you realize you are the dimension you previously thought you were actually having an experience in.
So, and let me see if I'm getting this right. So, in other words, there is no reality out there.
Right.
It's And it's not really in here either. In that
because space. The concept of out and in are time-space concepts.
Yeah.
But it is, for lack of a better term, happening in your consciousness.
In your consciousness.
And that's what reality is.
I think where I get confused is that I think of my consciousness as being in the brain.
And say that again?
I think of my consciousness as being part of the brain itself.
Right.
And I don't think it is that, is it?
I think even a lot of our scientists are beginning to realize that it's not so much that the brain generates consciousness, but it's designed to act, in a sense, as a receiver for consciousness or
yes.
a translator for consciousness.
Yes, yes, that's, yes. That would make much more sense.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's what makes channeling possible.
Huh.
Is because if it is a receiver, if the consciousness that you are, in a sense, is channeling through the brain as it is, then something else can also be channeling through the brain if you want to turn the channel.
Yeah, yeah. And that means that we're all channels.
Yes, we are all channels. And channeling is something probably most people can do, and a lot of people do, whether they know it or not.
Uh-huh.
A singer who is lost in the song, an actor who becomes the part, is channeling.
Huh,
it's a channeling
yeah.
state.
Huh, very interesting.
And in that state, you can access a number of different things. So
mm-hmm.
it just depends on what you want to do with it.
Wow. I know that sometimes, quantum physicists, you touched on that briefly. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about that. In the movie, it's the What the Bleep movie, I might as well
mm-hmm.
say it out there, they talk about our atoms, and when you break apart the body and you get down to the smallest particles and blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
you find out that there are, you know, quarks and so on, and that they literally disappear and go somewhere, and they don't know where they go.
Yes.
Where do they go?
They're going, or they're all right here. It's just that they change their state, or what we're perceiving is that, I believe, they are of a nature where, like we talked about holographically, it's what you choose to think about them, what you choose to believe about them, what you choose to observe about them,
uh-huh.
is what creates the result that you get. So it's all energy in flux, it's all vibration, and how you decide to measure it, how you decide to relate to it, determines
uh-huh.
what aspect of it you actually interact with.
Hmm. The other thing, I'm not sure I understand that, but I'm going to listen to the interview and see if I can figure it
okay.
out. The other thing that they talk about a lot on there is about consciously creating your day. Now, is that something that's beneficial, or is that just another fad thing?
No, I think that's what harkens back to following your excitement.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's the realization that sensation that we call excitement,
yeah.
that sensation in our bodies that we call joy and peace
uh-huh.
and love and excitement, is the actual sensing of the energetic vibration of our true natural selves.
Okay.
And when we then choose to act on the things that contain that energy, that make us feel that way, in other words,
uh-huh.
we are in alignment with our true natural selves, and that's what opens up an experience in synchronicity that is most representative on a daily basis of our true natural selves.
And
that's
so,
creating your day. That's creating your life experience, is following that joy, being in alignment with your true natural self by doing so, and receiving the reflection of the vibration and the experience that is representative of that true natural self.
Okay. So, in other words, the ability to receive the reflection as opposed to trying to control it.
Well, exactly, and here's a good analogy, and Bashar has used this analogy many times. I think it's a particularly potent one. And if you look at physical reality literally like it's a mirror, if you're looking in the mirror and you see that your reflection is frowning, you don't go over to the reflection and try to put a smile on the reflection's face. That'll never work. You have to actually choose to smile first, but when you do, the reflection has no choice but to smile back.
Oh,
but if you
that.
Wait for the reflection to smile first, you will be waiting for the rest of your life. Because the reflection has no power in and of itself, has no consciousness in and of itself. It is just a reflection of you, of what you're giving off.
Wow. That really does all put it all back on us, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's where it belongs.
Yes. You could almost say that all the ills in the world are a result of us not taking responsibility for our reflections.
Yes, you could.
So then if we want to change the reflection that we see in the world, which is there's it gets a little tricky because it's not out there, it's in here.
Yes, and of course it is. Of course, it is by agreement. Everyone has their own idea of, you know, what they want to believe in and what their reflection is. So it has to be by consensus. But nevertheless, whatever it is that affects you will be determined completely by the attitude you put out and the reflection you put out. So even if someone else's intention is negative, you will only result getting a result of a positive experience if you maintain the vibration and change yourself to see a better world. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to translate their energy for yourself in a positive way, even if their intention is negative.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, that's the trick. And I know that's the difficult trick, is seeing things that we typically are taught to define in a negative way as potentially positive. Everything, according to Bashar, is actually fundamentally neutral.
Oh.
There's no built-in meaning. It's kind of a weird way to think about it, but he's actually said that the greatest gift we have is that life is actually literally technically meaningless, that we have no built-in meaning to anything. Everything is a set of neutral props, and it's the meaning we give it, either unconsciously or consciously, that determines the effect we get out of any given situation, and therefore any situation can actually serve double duty and can cause a positive or a negative result in our lives, depending on what kind of vibration we put into it, what kind of definition we put into it. And that's why, to him, it's so important we get in touch with what those definitions and beliefs are, because it's the definitions and beliefs that are absolutely determining the effect we get out of any given situation we find ourselves in.
Wow. Wow.
Again, physics, from their point of view.
Wow.
What you put out is what you get back. So if everything is neutral, and you decide that a situation, even if it looks the same as it did a minute ago, is positive, he's saying that no matter what everyone else's experience in that situation is, you will only get a positive effect from it in your life. And then you can act as an example to others to let them know they can do the same, and that's how you help other people.
Wow. But the event in itself may not be, is not necessarily positive or negative.
No, it's absolutely neutral. It's just a series of events. It's just a prop.
Yeah.
And it has no built-in meaning other than what we've been taught to assign to that situation. And it's the assignment of meaning that gets us in trouble. Because especially if we don't know that we're doing it.
Oh, yes, yes. Which, and so basically what you're saying is that, you know, if we're not conscious or if we're unconscious of those...
Exactly.
Yes, okay.
Because we're brought up to believe certain things we don't even necessarily know we believe in.
Yes, and then that creates a fixed reality around us, which limits us, and then, you know...
Yes, and then we're feeding off of that reality, and it's reinforcing itself, because every belief comes with an ability to reinforce itself as if it's the only reality there is.
And then on top of that, we find other people who agree with our reality.
Of course.
Which further reinforces us.
Of course.
We might as well put barbed wire up around our body.
Of course. So that's the whole idea of awakening to the possibility that the same reality can actually completely create a completely different effect in your life, and the willingness to unlock from that and look for a different way to relate to it. It's all about relationship to life. You know.
Wow. That's really awesome. Oh, my goodness.
You know, or not.
Or not, yes, right.
It's whatever people want to believe, and it doesn't matter in that context.
Right.
They don't have to believe a word Bashar is saying. They have to believe a word I'm saying.
Right.
This is what
right.
works for me. This is what works for them. It's what works for a lot of people.
Yes.
But I do see that it does work for people when they use it, and if someone is not in any way, shape, or form interested in using it, God bless them. They'll get what they need somewhere else. I have no doubt about that.
Well, I'll have to tell you, Daryl, that what Bashar says and what you say makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. I mean, it just seems like the only thing that does make any sense.
That's how a lot of people feel. They get to that point and hear these kinds of things, whether they get them from Bashar or from the Seth material or from wherever they get them from, even from, you know, different faiths and religions, and it gets to this point and they say, you know, it's just the only thing that makes sense. And I think that's just a reflection of the new paradigm and a reflection of the fact that our consciousness is definitely changing, hence radio shows like yours, conversations like this.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Daryl, and Bashar, wherever he is.
You.
When he's back, just thank him for me.
I'm sure
for doing
he knows.
Such a wonderful job with us. And, you know, we're all eternally grateful for the help that we're getting here now. And what you're doing is just marvelous. And
as you, thank you very much for having the show, for taking the time, being willing to put these kinds of ideas out there. I think that's what makes all the difference. And thank you for following your joy.
Oh, well, thanks a million, Daryl.
My pleasure.
All right, and I hope that people see you in Studio City, and that they definitely visit your website, which is bashar.org.
Correct.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks
again. Thank you so much.